Okay, good afternoon. We're going to go ahead and call this meeting of CRPA Local Government and Housing Committee to order. Date is Wednesday, September 28th, 2022, and it's 3:33. Ooh, 3:33. Ooh. Okay, first item on the agenda is a roll call to determine quorum. I believe Tracy? Yep, thanks. Could you please call the roll? Thank you.
Ms. Oldeen?
Here.
Mr. Anderson? Ms. Faustinos?
Here.
Mr. Bass?
Here.
Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Yeah.
Hit me off the stride.
Ms. Hill? Ms. Novosel.
Here.
But she's ex officio. She established
for
the quorum.
Okay.
Cody, we have a quorum.
Oh, so Cody. Yep. Thank you, Cody. Thank you. All right.
I apologize. This is Scott Anderson.
Perfect.
I had it up. I was not aware that the secretary was part of the local government and housing committee. Is that?
Okay. Yeah. She is. Yeah. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate you being here then. All right. With that, we do have a quorum. We're going to go on to the next item, which is approval of the agenda.
There are no changes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Then we're going to say that they are amended, that they are deemed approved. Thank you. All right, approval of the minutes. We have a set of minutes from May 25th, 2022 on page 17 of your packets. Do any members of the committee wish to make any changes?
Madam Chair, yes. I requested some minor clerical corrections and submitted those to Marian.
Okay, thank you. Fine, great. Then, do I hear a motion to approve with those changes?
So moved.
Okay, great. Thank you. Anyone object? Okay, so motion passes. Oh, do we need a vote on this? We do. Doesn't say we do. Okay. Oh, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. Motion passes. All right, on to item number three, review and provide direction on evaluation metrics for allocation of the State of California's Regional Early Action Planning 2.0 or REAP 2.0 grant funds in the Lake Tahoe region to accelerate progress towards state housing goals and climate commitments, provide direction and guidance on proposed uses of the REAP 2.0 funds. Okay. So this is agenda item number three, review and provide direction on the metrics. I'm going to pass it on to Karen Fink to present. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. So before I get into these metrics and get your input on this REAP application that we're getting ready to apply for, first, I just wanted to thank Supervisor Novosel for her leadership of this committee. I believe this is your last meeting of chairing this committee, as Supervisor Novosel is termed out. And I just wanted to mention from the very beginning of before TRPA even really had this elevated as an initiative, Supervisor Novosel got an El Dorado County Housing Task Force going, which was really the spark that led to the South Tahoe Housing Needs Assessment and eventually even led to parts of this initiative. So I just really want to thank you for all of your support and encouragement throughout this process. It's really been a pleasure working with you. So getting into today's presentation, we're going to be talking about some major funding that's coming through the state of California for housing, really in recognition of the serious housing crisis that we have. And this is an opportunity to advance the Tahoe Living priorities that you heard about and discussed at the July Housing Workshop. So today we would like to tell you about a couple of opportunities, and we are specifically looking for your feedback on the first one. Next slide, please. So today I'm going to give you some background on the REAP program itself. Then I also want to talk about the Tahoe-specific outreach that we've done as in support of our application. And I'll go over some of the input that we've received and how it's informed the evaluation metrics that we included in the staff report and the program as a whole. Next slide, please. So the grant program we're talking about today is California's Regional Early Action Planning Grant 2.0. And this is the second cycle. The first cycle of the grant went directly to local jurisdictions for them to fulfill their housing objectives. And the main goal of this program is to accelerate progress towards state housing goals and climate commitments. And there's really also two key elements of this that are important to the state of California, and that is to really use it to help regions implement their sustainable community strategy. So that's our regional transportation plan and our regional plan, as well as helping local jurisdictions implement their housing elements and meet their sixth cycle RENA, their regional housing needs assessment requirements. So proposed uses for these funds need to meet three objectives, and those include supporting infill development that facilitates housing supply, choice, and affordability. The funds also need to affirmatively further fair housing, and that means to take meaningful actions towards combating patterns of segregation and discrimination and fostering communities that encourage access to opportunity. And then finally, the funds need to support reducing vehicle miles traveled. Next slide, please. So California's REAP funding is split into three different funding buckets, and we as the MPO are eligible for two of those buckets. And the first one is the one we're mainly talking about today, and that is the MPO direct allocation. So this is formula funding, and our region is eligible for just over $600,000 of that funding. So we will get that funding, but we also need to comply with the state of California's fairly rigid application requirements. And that's partly why we needed to take this step of bringing this to you today to help fulfill those requirements. So the second bucket of funding is competitive, and that's called the High Impact Transformative Program. That's a $30 million program statewide, and MPOs, cities, counties, and tribal entities can apply directly for those funds for applications between $5 million and $15 million. And so that grant program could take us much farther as a region as far as really bringing transformative, you know, on-the-ground projects potentially to fruition. It will likely be pretty competitive. So we are planning in the next few weeks to meet with our local jurisdictions and other partners to determine whether we could put forward a compelling regional package and whether that's something that we want to do. So more on that. Both of these pots can be used for planning or implementation or a mix of both. And both applications are due December 31st of this year. So today, again, we're just looking for your input on the first one, but we wanted to let you know about the other one as well. Next slide, please. So we've been conducting outreach on this all from the beginning of the year. We've had one-on-one meetings with each of our local jurisdictions, with the League to Save Lake Tahoe, with social service organizations, and the Washoe Tribe. And we also issued two memos to solicit input in a more formal way. So we've taken the input that we've received on those, and that's what's informing our recommendation today and the program as a whole. And we also just really want to thank everybody who took the time to provide input and who's here today to provide additional input as well. Next slide, please. So this summarizes the input we heard. So basically, we did hear that increasing the number of permanently affordable and workforce housing is the most important thing. We did hear from social service representatives that there's an immediate need for rental assistance or housing assistance to keep people in their homes, but they also recognize that just putting those funds towards that wouldn't really help us solve the problem long term. So we think that that could be something we might look at for that bigger grant. We also heard that we should try to stretch these funds as far as they will go. And since it's not a lot of funding, $600,000 probably won't go very far towards implementation when it costs over $500,000 to build just one affordable housing unit right now. So that really tells us that where we are in the process is we're at a place where we still need to be looking at advancing our Tahoe Living priorities that the Tahoe Living Working Group has put forward and that the governing board directed staff to advance at the July housing workshop. And we need to do that so that local governments can more effectively implement their housing elements and their regional housing needs assessments. We also heard that we should have a robust yet streamlined environmental process for any proposed use, and that we should minimize administrative costs. Next slide, please. So based on what we heard from the partners, there was widespread support for using these funds to advance the priorities of the Tahoe Living Working Group and support the direction that the board gave us at the July housing workshop. So we did need to develop evaluation metrics to meet grant requirements and also to help us evaluate the specific scope that we will land on within those priorities. And so to do that, we came up with a set of metrics that are in your staff report. And then here on the slide, I just highlighted some of the ones that were more heavily weighted to just kind of help illustrate what like the package of proposed uses would deliver using these metrics. So so one of the key metrics is that proposed uses need to show that they would bring about a significant change in land use patterns and travel behaviors, and particularly with respect to reducing VMT. We also need each project to show, or each proposed use to show, that it will have a multi-jurisdictional benefit, so have a regional benefit. And then we want these proposed uses to impact a large number of units. So we have a couple of evaluation metrics that say that the proposed use should facilitate the construction or provision of over 100 units. And that's really emphasizing that more likely we're looking at our planning priorities in the Tahoe Living set of priority actions that are more about making sure that we can build, you know, that we can facilitate the numbers of units that are that the local government's housing elements call for. So that's why we put that number in there. Maybe a very large project, capital project, could potentially qualify under these metrics, but you know, probably unlikely because it would still need to have a regional impact and meet some of these other, get score high on some of the other metrics. And then the proposed uses need to benefit disadvantaged communities and also show cost effectiveness. So we want to ensure that we're efficient in using the funding to take these funds as far as we can. And so TRPA would likely manage most of this funding, as many of the Tahoe Living priorities are focused on TRPA's codes and policies, such as the height, density, and coverage changes that you heard about and the environmental analysis to support those. However, we also see potential for a local jurisdiction or another partner to potentially propose advancing one of the priorities themselves. And if a local jurisdiction had capacity to do that, that could help speed the process and move some of our priorities forward concurrently. And one example of that would be, we know that Placer County has been looking at ways to do a more programmatic review of multifamily projects through the update of their area plan. And that could be something that could be replicable amongst the other jurisdictions. So that could be a project or a proposed use where we potentially might want to sub-allocate some of those funds. Next slide, please. So the next steps are to get your input on these metrics and the program as a whole today. We also anticipate that we will likely get some feedback from the state of California on our metrics as well. So we might need to modify them somewhat depending on that input. And then in October, we will be doing a final solicitation for proposals for kind of how to use the funds. And we'll bring this back for governing board approval in November. And we need to submit that final application by December 31st. Next slide, please. So our specific ask for you today is the input on the metrics and the proposal. And then we also wanted to get on your radar screen that we'll be requesting letters of support from many of you as well. So we wanted to ask you about that. So with that, I will turn it back over to the chair.
Thank you, Karen. And I'm going to ask committee members if you have any questions? Yeah, start with Shelly down. Oh, okay. All right, we'll go to
I'm
Sissy.
Used to, I'm trained. That this is what we do to indicate we want to talk. We turn on our mic.
Thanks,
Cindy. Karen, Placer County in particular probably only has a couple sites that would ever benefit from 100 units or more. And so, you know, I raise concern. I understand we want to reach as many. Is the program about one site, or could be a program that would apply to more than 100, but might be at 3 or 4 different sites?
We're thinking of 100 in a very broad sense. So for instance, one of the proposed uses that we anticipate would score well with these metrics is putting these funds towards advancing phase 2 of the Tahoe Living Housing Initiative. So having funding to use for, you know, to advance the code that would allow the additional height, density, and coverage, and the environmental analysis that would be. So that would influence many, many thousands, potentially thousands of units. That's kind of what we're saying, as opposed to, you know, a much smaller effort that would really be focused on just, say, one parcel that would only impact 20 units.
I misunderstood that. When you put a number of units on there, I started to think it was about a project in particular versus the program itself.
Yeah,
so I appreciate that most of these are about the program. Thanks.
Well, they are about, we're calling them proposed uses, and the proposed use might be kind of a specific piece of analysis, sort of the actions that we've identified through the Tahoe Living Working Group.
Okay, and then this is not about this, so I just want to be careful to not take us off track too much because it's late. But recently, it's come to our attention, both in the town of Truckee and in Placer County, we have units that are affordable that are sitting vacant because they are 2 and 3 bedrooms. We have too many of those for the income levels. And we've talked about this. Our income levels are higher than AMI. Our housing prices are that much higher. So the gap is really still there, and maybe even more than what you see in Bay Area or metropolitan areas. But the fact is, many of our people make more than necessary or needed to qualify for some of the low and affordable. And so I just caution us to always be updating these numbers and looking with the local housing group. I know we're looking at achievable housing as well, but making sure that we're looking at the market that we need and building the types of units we need and supporting the development of those sorts of units so that there is a tracking. Because when I asked, I thought somebody's keeping track of it. Nobody. I had to have somebody call the town of Truckee, call Nevada County, and look at Placer County to see the wait list for one in studios and one bedrooms and to look at the vacancy in 2 and 3 bedrooms. So it's just an interesting issue that we need to be thoughtful of as we're looking at any kind of programs.
Sorry. Cindy, do we have that information? Did you collect that information?
I get it to you.
I collected it. My office collected it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's specifically a Truckee dilemma, as I understand. That's happening in Truckee, not in the basin. Is that your understanding?
Right now, it's not in the basin because we don't have any new affordable units in the basin, but it is in the Meadowview Place at Schaefer's Mill, which is a Placer County project, and the 2 and 3 bedrooms have vacancy. And yet we have a huge waiting list for studio 1 bedrooms.
Good data to be able to download and understand. Shelley, please.
Is there anything in the Placer Housing Code that precludes subletting? So if you only needed 1 bedroom, you could sublet to another person?
I think this is more the issue of affordability. So if you have 2 working adults with no dependents, you probably make too much to qualify for that. Those are the affordable units, and they have certain AMI standards.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right.
And so just being cautious that any program we're looking at, we're not too focused, as much as we get pushed by the state to be in the affordable range, because of tax credit financing and funding mechanisms, it's not making sense, at least on North Shore.
And I don't know if subletting would help if you're talking about looking at income levels.
Yeah,
because you can sublet to 2 low-income folks and still pay the rent that is required.
Pay the rent, but I don't know.
So much of it is based on family size. It is so low. It is people working full-time at McDonald's.
Sorry, yeah, go ahead. Oh, Belinda. Hi, Belinda. Would you like to talk?
Hi there. I wanted to go back to the metrics slide and ask a question that I think I know the answer to, but I wanted to clarify. For the MPO pot, these metrics don't seem to have a whole lot regarding climate impacts. So does that put us at a disadvantage, or is it the climate pot just the larger pot that I'm not going to remember the name of? So I just wanted to figure out why there was no significant climate benefit metric in
here. So thank you. That's a great question. So the goals for both of those pots that I mentioned are basically the same. But the state is, this is focused on housing and climate, but the way they want to see the climate addressed is through change in land use patterns and travel behavior. Okay. So the grant is very focused on housing and land use. It's not, for instance, we would not be able to fund EV charging stations with this program, is my understanding.
Right, right. But you could leverage, hopefully, and make it more competitive by including those types of features.
Yes, or it could be part of it, but it couldn't be the only piece.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah. All right. And you know, obviously, adjacency to, you know, green space, green infrastructure always helps, you know, on these kinds of programs. Okay, thank you.
Sue.
Yes, please. Yeah.
So this is a new terminology for me. Naturally affordable workforce housing. Mm-hmm. How does that differ from affordable workforce housing?
So we have definitions in our code for affordable housing and achievable housing, and that means they need to be deed restricted. We're also seeing housing, for instance, in the city where the housing is not deed restricted, but it's rental housing. And rental housing is primarily used by the local workforce. We don't really see those being turned into vacation rentals, for instance, or sitting empty. If it's a rental apartment or, for instance, an accessory dwelling unit that may not be deed restricted, we consider that naturally affordable housing. So it just kind of means it's not deed restricted, but it could be likely to be used for a local worker.
So that is defined in the code. Because I've never seen it before.
We don't define naturally affordable in the code.
Could you just put non-restricted affordable workforce housing? I think people would probably understand what you're talking about as opposed to naturally. I mean, I don't want to argue about terminology, but I'm just thinking about, you know, not having to respond to questions about what constitutes naturally affordable housing. A cave. Top of a tree.
Right.
Yeah, sure. Right.
Top of a monopole.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Let's see. Is the project expected to permanently increase the overall affordable and workforce housing stock? I'm assuming that relates to whether or not it's deed restricted in perpetuity?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe we could clarify that as well, Karen, so you're not just flooded with questions about what these things mean. Maybe I'm the only one, you know, who's asking these questions.
Oh, good clarity.
And then what is the regional level of impact? I understand you're talking about impact on more than one jurisdiction, but could, you know, maybe it would be useful to give examples of what that means. In other words, that you're not crossing boundaries. You're not, you know, in both, you're not in two jurisdictions with one project, but that based on employment opportunities, you're servicing more than one jurisdiction, and maybe the use servicing should be inserted somewhere. If I'm interpreting that correctly, Karen, I'm trying to think of examples of regional level impacts.
Comment?
I think that means, from our discussions beforehand, it means what Cindy was talking about. It's something that works in more than one jurisdiction.
So, but in what respect does it work more than one jurisdiction?
So we did a program to change densities across all jurisdictions versus a project for just one site or one jurisdiction.
Well, but this doesn't refer to code changes. Doesn't it refer to projects?
I think so. That is a point of confusion that I want to apologize for. In this memo, we called these projects. As we continued to discuss this after we released the memo, we shifted to calling it proposed uses because we are primarily talking about planning efforts. Okay. And we realized that project sounds like a capital project. So we had that language in the earlier version, but we changed it in the presentation. So I apologize that this is, has this older language.
Definitely gives us some clarity. That's helpful. I was kind of getting hung up on it.
Yeah, so I would change that in the final version to say proposed use, not project.
Okay.
Shelley, anything?
That's it. Thank you, Sue.
Any other? I think this is great. About $550,000 we're talking about, so it's not going to go very far, I don't think. But if it helps us to be able to design actual projects, then that's great. And that's where I was kind of going when you were talking about projects, like, oh, good, we're going to do some projects. But, you know, but you're right. We can't do that. At $550,000, we're looking at more of the higher level planning process, which I understand. I'm just get frustrated on it. But, you know, because it's still like we're talking about a lot of density and, you know, uses that we know we need in low income. I see you're identifying a lot of those issues in a high level way. But how do we get to actually getting a project on the ground with this money? Is that even going to be a possibility? Can they identify one part of all of this?
Well, that's what we wanted to get your input on today. We're proposing that we feel the most effective use of this fund so that we don't tie ourselves up with a lot of administration trying to administer a program where we need to look at a lot of different grant proposals. We feel that the most efficient way to use these funds is really to put them towards changing the code so that private development can come in and deliver housing more effectively than they can now. But, you know, we're definitely happy to take your input. We could, you know, look at setting aside a chunk of this money, or we could even just, you know, through a formula, designate it to each of the three designate a small portion to each of the three jurisdictions, and they could use it in a certain way as long as it's consistent with the grant guidelines.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the issues we all have. We're small, you know, planning agencies that are already so overwhelmed that for us to try to change their world by saying we need a low income project, just don't have the wherewithal. And to be able to perhaps do grants or some level of help, that might be able to get us to where we can actually see some movement, which is needed.
I'll say what I think Karen's saying in different words. Our preconceived notion coming to you all was using the $550,000 to make systemic changes will give us a bigger bang in the buck, bang for the buck in the long run. Maybe the high impact funds we could go after something or actually build units, but that's.
And I think that's a good way to thank you for clarifying that, because that's, you know, our brains again are thinking project and you know, I've got to stop it. So that's what happened. I was reading this the other day. I went, oh, no. So phase one, phase two, almost when you're talking about this, that makes sense. Okay, thank you. Any other comments?
I actually did have one more.
Oh, please, go ahead.
So within California, you can apply and become a housing-friendly county or jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And that does expedite some funding. And so Placer County's been working on that. And so is that an opportunity, at least for the California side of the lake, to have that focus on meeting those goals and objectives so that we could expedite funding for the two local jurisdictions within the basin? Just something to think about. I don't know. There's too many different pots of money that I don't understand and programs that I don't understand. So just something to keep in the back of our minds on that.
Yeah, and perhaps that's a part of that phase one.
You know, and it could be that through these programs, we have set up a system that then we can qualify for projects in El Dorado and Placer County to move forward. I don't know anything about Nevada's funding, hardly know anything about California. So,
yeah, I do think that some of the criteria for qualifying as that type of community are some things that we currently don't allow in the Tahoe Basin. Like, we don't allow the densities that are required to qualify.
To qualify, and then looking at our plans too. But infill and town centers, you can. So, yeah.
And I imagine that's what some of this money can easily go for, is taking a look at what's out there right now, being able to free up. Okay. Yes. Okay, great. If there's no more comments, I'm going to go to a public comment. Come on up, please. You have 3 minutes. Go ahead and turn on the podium. There's a little light there for speaking. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, members of the committee, TRPA staff. Good presentation, Karen. My name is Zach Thomas. I'm the housing manager for the city of South Lake Tahoe. I'm here with my colleague, Jessica Wackenhut, also with the housing division. We thoroughly reviewed the staff report and had some comments. Initially, I think all of our comments are kind of reflected with what the committee has already kind of said and even staff has clarified. I will start out by saying that on August 3rd, during the initial request made on July 11th for the Tahoe Housing Catalyst Program, the city did submit a recommendation of the uses of for the REAP 2.0 funds, basically in line with what staff is saying right now, that the funds should be used to conduct all necessary environmental and threshold analysis associated with phase 2A and 2B of the median term. That's the current phase of the TRPA five-year housing action plan or five-year housing work plan. While this comment letter provided the city's preferred use of the funds, we're also happy to speak to what we're here today to discuss and provide input on the metrics presented in the staff report. We request that the metrics be aligned with the REAP 2.0 guidelines example metrics. Currently, as proposed, there is no separate categories within the metrics, which appears to kind of force the metrics to perhaps compete with one another. Again, I think the term of project versus intended use, I think that clarifies some of our confusion in terms of it looked like maybe projects would be competing. There is an example of this scoring system in attachment 4 of the REAP 2.0 guidelines. That's the state guidelines. I'm just going to provide a couple examples here of some areas that we thought at least could use a little clarification, maybe a little just kind of adjustment in the wording. And again, I think some of it's already been spoken to, but I'll go ahead and go through them. Number one, the metric of environmental review. Currently, this metric appears to penalize projects that do not go through environmental review. Now, if that were the case, Sugar Pine Village affordable housing project, which is under construction as we speak, kind of the big flagship affordable housing project in construction in the basin, this utilized SB 35. Under California state law to streamline and exempt certain types of projects in certain jurisdictions from environmental review. Now, this would presumably, it reads as though this might score lower than a project that would go through environmental review. I'm not sure if that was the intention, but again, that was kind of how we read it. The metric of 100 units, I think the committee had a similar concern that it came across as a project of 100 units. An affordable housing project of this size would be close to $100 million in today's prices and would be constructed in several phases. So it would be unlikely that a project this size would be solely reliant on a grant of this kind of small planning size level. There is a quote in the metrics that says, would the project not otherwise be built? So I guess that just raised concerns that we wouldn't want to just tie it to a project that would solely rely on this project, these funds. Projects rely on 10, 15, sometimes even 20 uses of funds. They're pretty complex nowadays given the cost of everything. And then also third, by treating low, moderate, and achievable income the same, the scoring the same, this might have an unintended consequence of reproducing housing inequality. Supervisor Gustafson, you had mentioned kind of the unique situation in the North Shore. We don't see that in the South Shore. In fact, it's kind of funny in that the AMI for El Dorado County is double the AMI for the city. So we see a lot of, we don't have city housing units sitting vacant. Most of our low income restricted properties have 1 to 2 or even more year waiting lists. I say more because the waiting lists get cut off. So right. It could be longer, we don't know. Again, so just this idea of maybe a tiered scoring criteria. would create a more equitable outcome or access to, you know, housing opportunities, scoring low-income housing projects higher, could maybe direct the funding in a way that would be consistent with federal state law to affirmatively further fair housing. And that's also consistent with standard practice. That's really the metrics that every single state grant uses, is kind of that tiered thing. These are three examples we provided. There are also just some fundamental issues with the scoring metric that make it a little unclear how the REAP 2.0 grant would be best used under the proposed metrics. These issues include a reference to disadvantaged communities and historically underserved communities. It's just not clear how those are defined. Typically, the basin doesn't actually have any of those communities, which can make applying for certain grants challenging. So again, it was just a little confusion of how those are going to be defined. Also, as was brought up earlier, naturally occurring affordable housing, or NOAA short-term, it's a little unclear how that's also defined. Typically, NOAA is part of a larger preservation strategy. And as Karen referred to, it's kind of an existing rental product. Again, part of a preservation strategy. And it's just not sure that's totally reflected in the metrics to the extent that maybe staff is intending. Lastly, the staff report referenced 8 letters and coordination with stakeholders. At the beginning of the presentation, I said we submitted 1 letter. There's 7 other. We're just curious as to who those stakeholders are. We work with partner agencies widely, and it was just curious that those letters weren't part of the staff report, so if we could see those or if they could be presented as a future presentation, that would be great. Again, we brought copies of our letter to submit into the public record today so that the committee, if so chooses, can receive copies. Thank you.
Thank you, Zach. Time. Appreciate all that.
Mm-hmm.
Any other commenters that are here in person? I don't see anyone else jumping up. Anyone online?
Tracy? Yes, Madam Chair. Doug Flaherty.
Okay. Doug?
Yeah. If you unmute Doug, you can address the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So a little bit frustrating. I think everyone ought to have 6 minutes from now on public interest comments. You just gave the gentleman from South Lake Tahoe 6 or more minutes. Why? Because he's a government bureaucrat. That's, you know, this is the type of inequitable treatment that you guys give the public versus your government so-called partners. So I think from now on, you guys ought to give everybody 6 minutes. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Doug. And I do apologize. I wasn't paying attention to the timer. That was just oversight. Thank you, though. Appreciate that. Any other online comments?
Madam Chair, you might want to clarify that people who are representing an organization, in this case, the City of South Lake Tahoe, are afforded 5 minutes as opposed to people who are speaking as individuals who receive 3. So, yeah, it was a bit of an oversight, but
it still went over. Yeah, and I apologize for that. But you're right. It was more time. There is a difference. But I did get over on that one. Sorry. And I've been doing that all day, just FYI, with my legal. Let everyone, doesn't matter who it was. So I apologize. All right. Any other online commenters?
No, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. All right. So I'll bring this back to our committee. Any other comments here? do you want to go over the comments from the city, Karen?
Sure. Thank you. I can address them pretty quickly.
Okay.
So I'd be happy with the next staff report that we bring to the governing board, or even in advance, we can post the comments that we received on the previous memos, although we did try to reflect them pretty much verbatim in the staff report itself. So there is a summary of the public input that we received. And then as far as the comment about disadvantaged and historically underserved, there is a definition in the NOFA, and so we need to follow that definition for disadvantaged and underserved. I think we should remove the scoring about environmental analysis, because pretty much all projects need to go through an environmental analysis with TRPA, and we'll just work that into sort of the overall project description.
You know, that was nice, too, because Sugar Pine didn't, you know, they had that. waiver, and that was a good point to bring out.
Mm-hmm. And then I could take that point about potentially differentiating a little bit more between low, moderate, achievable, and naturally affordable workforce housing, which will change the definition on that. Mm-hmm. And also, I can potentially align these with the categories. There's those three categories that I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation. We could organize the metrics in those categories, I believe.
Okay.
We sort of felt that these metrics are kind of hit all those categories, so that's why we didn't break them up, but we can try to align them that way if we can.
Great, thank you. Yeah, and I think there was something about the disadvantaged and historically underserved, just getting definitions on those. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's the definition that is in the NOFA, in the guidelines itself, so okay. We will need to follow the definition that the state of California has included, and that is a really important part of their requirements. So I'm quite certain that we will need to make sure that our projects, to the extent that they can in the basin, do help that category.
Great. All right. Thank you. I think that was about it as far as the questions go. Any other comments or questions from them? Okay. No? Belinda, did you have any? No. Okay. Good. All right. Well, then let's see where we're at here. Public comment. So you did get some good feedback, Karen. Thank you for that. And have you received your good then? I take it. Okay. All right. Then we're going to go ahead and move on to item number 4, committee member comments. And thank you, Karen. Appreciate all your work on that. I know that's a lot of work, and I really, really appreciate all the work from you and staff.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for everybody for your comments. So on to item number 4, committee members. Comments. Do you have anything?
It was really quick. I just wanted to clarify that the vacancy in those units is multifaceted reason why.
Okay.
And it is a lot dependent on income. So I don't want to give anybody that we have a desperate need for housing. It's just making sure people can qualify for the product we're building.
Okay.
So that was the issue.
Thank you. Shelley, do you have any comments? Belinda, do you have any? Okay. And I just like to say, I apologize again. I'm not the greatest chair. I'm not used to doing this, so I wasn't watching the timer. And I will say, for my defense, again, that during legal committee, I let everybody go over. I just tried to give them a warning saying, you're going over. that's all my only comment I had. So final public comments, interest. Our final matter of business today is a general public interest comment period. If any member of the public wishes to address the local governance and housing committee at this time, please raise your hand in person or come on up, or let us know by raising your hand, quote unquote, online. Do we have anybody in house here? I don't see anyone jumping up. Do we have any comments from anyone online?
Madam Chair, we have no hands raised to comment on this item.
All right, wonderful. Then, is there a motion? I'm bringing this back to the committee. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. We're adjourned.